For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So we've been talking about stories about suchness from Dongshan, the Chinese founder of our lineage, Zaodong or Shoto lineage. Tonight I want to talk about his teacher, Yunyang. So Yunyang is the one who said in the story about Dongshan leaving his teacher when he asked Yunyang what his reality or dharma or basic teaching was. Yunyang paused and said, just this is it. And so I talked about that central story. Dongshan then left and looked and saw his reflection in the stream and said, it now is me, I now am not it. And in that story there's actually some question. A monk later asked Dongshan, did Yunyan himself know it is or not? And Dongshan said, if he didn't know it is, how could he have said that? If he did know it is, how could he be willing to say it? So there's questions about Yunyan all through. And so I wanted to talk about a little bit about Yunyan's own practice. He was noted as a Zen failure. He didn't get it for a long time. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But then I want to talk about one of the really great stories from Yunyang about the moon and about being too busy. So it's a very important story for us these days. So a little bit about Yunyang's earlier practice. He had a brother named Dao Wu, and they practiced together with various teachers. And Yunyang studied with a couple of the great teachers the classic period in the 800s. One of them was Bai Zhang. He eventually became a student of Yao Shan, who we honor in our lineage. But and then later he also studied with Nan Chuan. So some of you know these names. It's not important. But Yao Shan studied for 20 years with Bai Zhang. He said that he was Bai Zhang's attendant for 20 years and didn't get it. So this is kind of notable because Bai Zhang is one of the great teachers in all the history of Zen. So his brother Dao Wu persuaded Yunyang to come back and practice with Yao Shan. And Yao Shan asked Yunyang about Bai Zhang and Yunyang couldn't really say anything. Once Yao Shan asked Yunyang, what do you do about birth and death right in front of you? And Yunyang responded, there's no birth and no death in front of me. And Yao Shan said, you were with Bai Zhang for 20 years and still you have not gotten rid of your commonness. So this is interesting for him to say that saying there's no birth and death is a kind of commonness. But the point is that Yunyang was still attached to some view of transcendence beyond birth and death, of getting rid of birth and death, of some ultimate state beyond this and at that point. And anyway, there are various stories about Yunyang's failures as a Zen student. Another time, Bai Zhang asked Yunyang, Yao Shan, excuse me, his teacher, asked Yunyang again about Bai Zhang's teaching. And Yunyang mentioned, oh, one time Bai Zhang entered the hall to teach, and he drove away the monks with his staff. And when they were almost out of the room, out of the hall, he called out, oh, monks! And when they turned around, Bai Zhang asked, what is it? And Yao Shan heard that and said, why didn't you say that before? Now, finally, thanks to you, I can see Bhajan. So, anyway, at that point, Yun Yan understood a little bit and awakened. So, if these stories are kind of opaque and inscrutable to you, don't worry about it. The teacher of the founder of our school, Yun Yan, didn't get it either for a long time. So, you know, we're descended from a very famous Zen failure. And there's other stories about Yun Yan then going to study with Nan Chuan, and who was another great teacher in that period, one of the great all-time Zen masters and all that, and also not getting it. And one time his brother Dawu was listening in when he went back to Yaoshan. This was later on. They both went back to Yaoshan, and his brother Dao was listening in, sitting outside the Dokshan and listening to their conversation. And Yun Yan was so obtuse that Dawu was just so heartbroken because he'd been taking his brother around to all these great Zen teachers and he didn't get it. Dawu bit his finger so hard it bled. Anyway, these are some stories, a little bit of the stories about how Yun Yan was a great Zen failure. And in the book, just as it goes into more detail about it, they're kind of complicated, some of the stories. But the point is that he had a reputation for just... and it's okay, because eventually he became the teacher of Dongshan, who wrote the Precious Marriage Samadhi we chant sometimes, and who's the founder of our school. I think Yun Yan was actually really great, and there's a number of teaching stories, all koans, between Yun Yan and his brother Dawu. So the one I want to talk about tonight is one of those. And I feel like this is a very relevant, important story for us in our time, in our busy world. Anyway, the story goes like this. One time, Yun Yan was... out in the monastery sweeping the grounds. And, you know, this is a common activity for monks cleaning the temple. We usually do this on Sundays. We, you know, kind of sweep and clean the temple. And Dawu came by and saw Yun Yan and he said, "Too busy." And Yun Yan said, "You should know there's one who isn't busy." And Dawu said, "Do you mean there's a second moon?" And Yun Yan held out his broom and said, "Which moon is this?" So that's the whole story. And so I want to talk about that story tonight. And we'll have some time for discussion. I think knowing the people in this room now, many of you often feel like you're too busy. Even the ones who've retired sometimes are too busy. And sweeping the ground feels kind of like, you know, gee, that would be a nice, pleasant kind of pastoral activity, going to some temple and sweeping the ground. It doesn't feel like busyness to us, but, you know, anyway, all of you have your own version of being too busy. Or most of you, I won't speak for everyone. I know I do. Dawu was, who was, you know, in stories, seems to be Yun Yan's older brother, is kind of always kind of pushing him. And he said, "Too busy, you know, implying that your mind is, you know." So some of you, I might have said this during Zazen, but I didn't. Some of you might have been too busy during Zazen, figuring out, you know, all your to-do list and all of that. And of course we say, don't try and get rid of your thoughts and feelings, and it's okay. But can you find this space that beneath your busyness, within your busyness, this is the issue. What is the relationship of your busyness to what Yun Yan said to his brother? "You should know there's one who's not busy." So, you know, when we come and sit here, sometimes we sit for a day, and, you know, some of you may have positions, hitting bells or doing other things in the session, but, you know, it's really a time to, and even coming here on Monday night, just sitting for a period, there's a time to start to know the one who's not busy. And actually helps in our busy life to know there's one who's not busy. So Yunyan said that, and Dawa said, do you mean there's a second moon? So this is a really important question. Is the one who's not busy separate from the one who's busy sweeping the temple or doing whatever else you think, you know, working at your computer or whatever else you think you have to do while you're busy? Is there a second moon? Is there a second reality? And Yunyan did this, to me, amazing thing. He didn't answer one way or another. He just said, he held out his broom and said, which moon is this? So there are many aspects to this story, including what is the moon, and where do we see our fullness? So the moon in Buddhism and in East Asian imagery is kind of this, when they say the moon, they mean the whole moon, the full moon, this big round moon. So when was the last full moon?
Easter, probably.
Okay. So is that moon waxing or waning now? See, we don't know because we're too busy on our busy streets. And okay.
It's finished waxing and it's starting to wane.
Okay. So people in Asia traditionally and still they know when the full moon is. Anyway, and I don't always. But which moon is this? So the point is, the Taoist concern was that that Yunyan was making a reality of being not busy that was somewhere else, separate, like from his situation right there. Like there were two realities. We might see the primary work of Yunyan and of Dongshan and of our tradition as the full integration of awareness of underlying suchness or wholeness with its compassionate expression, right in the busyness in the midst of the world. How do we see those fitting together? So this is a case in the Book of Serenity, and the commentator says, Yunyan and Dawu were illustrating the active conditions of the Dongshan or Soto Tsaudo progression. The one who is not busy need not be passive and dormant. So being not busy doesn't mean just kind of sleeping. Although, you know, you might do that. It's okay to sleep. But one song says, as you eat, boil tea, sew, sweep, or we could say all the other things that we do in our time, you should recognize the one who's not busy. Then you will realize the union of mundane reality and enlightened reality. In the Dongshan progression, this is called simultaneous inclusion, naturally, not wasting any time. Some of my teacher rebels once asked, what does it mean to not waste time? So we just chanted the harmony of difference and sameness, which ends with, do not pass your time in vain, or don't waste time. And when we asked that, they said that we're wasting time whenever we don't know that there is one who's not busy. So how do we know the one who's not busy? How do we know, not just when we're sitting on a cushion, although there too, is this a separate moon? So this question of which moon is this, or how can you say that there's some other moon that's not busy as opposed to sweeping the ground, that Yunyan was pointing to, it's a really interesting question. And of course, they're in these stories, there's both a literal and a metaphoric meaning in everything that's said. So they're talking about sweeping the ground, they're talking about not being busy, but they're also talking about wholeness, enlightenment, reality, suchness. So when Yuanyuan held out his broom and said, "Which moon is this?" Dawu first said, "If so, there's a second moon." Once on the commentator in the Book of Serenity says, "Only two. There's hundreds, thousands, myriads." So when we are willing to enter into the world and not just stay in some realm of being not busy that's apart from your tasks and sweeping the ground, then we see how these things come together. It's possible to also see that when we enter into all the business of the world, that in all the innumerable activities, that our lives can become fragmented. You know, I mean, I think that's very easy for us to see this part of my life and this part of my life and that part of my work and my meditation and relationships and, you know, going to the movies or whatever. All the different things we do, we can feel like our life is fragmented. I think that's a common ailment that people today have. So how many moons are there? There's a Surangama Samadhi Sutra in which Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, is sitting on our altar on a lion. He said, like the second moon, who will say it is the moon, who will deny it? For Manjushri, only one moon is real. So there's only one moon for Manjushri. In between, there's naturally nothing that is or is not the moon. So this has to do with the harmony of difference and sameness also. Manjushri is the Bodhisattva of wisdom or insight who sees oneness. There's only one moon. It's all one moon. And, you know, that's one way of hearing Yunyan's response. He's denying that there's a second moon. When Dawu asks him, we could hear it that way, that there's only one moon. That's the side of wisdom. That's the side of insight or sameness. But part of the story is that we do go out and sweep the grounds. We do take care of many different activities in the world, and we may well feel like we're too busy. Gary Snyder, who's great Zen ancestor, says in America, said that Zen practice comes down to two things: Zazen and sweeping the temple. And it's up to us to see how wide the walls of our temple are. So, you know, we can try and clean the temple of, you know, climate damage and racism in America, and, you know, there's many, many things to work on. So, what is this moon? Is there one moon? Is there two moons? Or are there 10,000 moons? There's another story about Dawu and Yunyan, which gets to another part of this. So there's the story about being too busy. There's this line about you should know there's one who's not busy. And then there's this question about what is our reality? And there's the full moon, and there's sometimes the crescent moon. And this has to do with seeing wholeness, seeing fullness, seeing suchness right now. This. So as we're sitting facing the wall, facing ourselves, there's just this. And yet, we get up and we're going to go, get up and go and have tea and cookies. Thank you, Jess. We're going to go out into our world and go in various directions and, you know, get in our cars or go to the CTA or whatever. Some of us here can walk home. That's great. What happens when we go out into beyond the one who's not busy and into the various activities of the world? So one way to talk about this is in terms of wholeness and partiality. And this also relates to sameness and difference, and the harmony of sameness and difference. And so there's another story that includes Yunyan and Dawu. This is also a commentary in a case in the Book of Serenity koan collection, and in Hongzhe's verse commentary, he says, vaguely like the moon through ivy, a crescent at that, talking about something that's partial. In Asia, still, they go out and look at the moon when it's a full moon. They have parties and go out and sit and drink and look at the moon and write poetry, whatever. But that's when the moon is full. There's a story that comes up in that koan case about, let's see, this is a time when two Zen teachers were looking at the moon. One of them was Yang Shan, who was a student of Weishan, a great teacher, and he was with a teacher named Shan Dao, who was actually a Dharma brother of Yunyan's final teacher, Yao Shan, so don't worry about all these names. But they were out there looking at the moon. And Yang Shan asked, when the moon is a crescent, where does the round shape go? And when it's full, where does the crescent shape go? So this is a question about the moon, but it's also a question about sameness and difference and their harmony and the one who's not busy and our the fullness of that. So when the moon is a crescent, where does the round shape go? When we're caught in partiality and in busyness and in illusions, where does wholeness, where does suchness go? When it's full, where does the crescent shape go? So this is an interesting question. I mean, it seems like a silly question in a certain way, but there are aspects of this. Shantou's response was, when it's a crescent, the round shape is concealed. When it's full, the crescent shape remains. So he's sort of partial to partiality. He sees the crescent no matter what's going on. He sees the incompleteness. And yeah, we can see that way. We can see that we're incomplete. We can see all the problems of the world and of ourselves. And that was sort of Shandao's position. Delusion is always there, lurking, even in the fullness of the moment. Even when we're not busy, we can get suddenly distracted. So that's one response. But Dawu and Yunyan heard about this, and they have responses too. So Dawu's comment was, when it's a crescent, yet it's not a crescent. When it's full, it's still not round. So Dawu's kind of subtle. He sees that, you know, the way we see things isn't the whole story. When we think we're incomplete, there's something more. When we think we are complete, there's still that's not it either. So Dao's emphasizing emptiness, the conditioned, illusory nature of both enlightenment and of delusion. Neither enlightenment nor delusion is complete. Yunyan, on the other hand, had another response. He said, when it's a crescent, the round shape remains. When it's full, the crescent shape does not exist. So this is Dongshan's teacher, the one who had been this great Zen failure, but who became the teacher of the founder of our lineage. And he said, when it's a crescent, the round shape remains. So you can see that. If you go out and look at the crescent moon, you can sort of see the outline of the full round moon, actually. You know? And, you know, maybe when you're too busy, you can see there's one who's not busy. And when you really see it, when it's full, when you really see not busy, there's no crescent, there's no partiality. Anyway, those are a couple of different positions about this. So these stories, you know, the stories about Dongshan, the stories about Yunyan, we're studying them now here in Chicago in the 2015? Okay, this is a story. This story has been passed on, and there's a recurrence of this story Dogen was the founder who started Soto Zen. He brought this tradition and all these stories to Japan. A few generations after him is a teacher named Keizan, the same name as our friend who's taking care of our affiliate Sangha in Albuquerque. And Keizan was a great teacher, considered the second founder of Soto Zen. And one time, just like Yangshan and Shandao, he was out looking at the moon with his student Gasan. And Keizan asked him, "Do you know that there are two moons?" And Gasan was perplexed and said, "No, he didn't." And Keizan said, "If you don't know that there are two moons, you cannot be a successor in the Soto lineage." And Gasan was perplexed, and the story goes that he went and sat with great determination, like an iron pole, for years, before finally realizing that there are two moons. So here the story changes completely when he gets to Japan. Instead of there's one moon, there's two moons. And, you know, one way to hear that story is that Keizan is emphasizing, clarifying, that the one who is not busy must also know that there's one who is busy. So, here we are. Not busy, busy. You should know there's one who's not busy. And yet, we still have to sweep the temple. We still have to take care of our world. So, the point of these stories is not to, you know, figure out some answer or a perfect resolution of them, but to be with them and allow them to be in us and to use them as ways of looking at our own practice. So, comments, questions. Do you know there's one who's not busy? Which moon is this? Anyone? Ben?
The shadings of that word one are interesting. Like, it could refer to like one being, or it could refer to one facet of a person, mm-hmm. cognitive or emotional or spiritual or something, or one part of a person's attention or something.
Well, that's where you get the many moons. Is there one who knows there's not busy, who's just one part of Ben, or is there one sitting right on your cushion who totally knows one who's not busy?
Word-wise, is there a shadings to be written to the languages that are translated into English, or that word one, that give subtlety to that concept?
Well, it's just the character one. We actually have it right outside this door on the wall here. Because Tanahashi, when he was here, he also did that one-stroke mountain, but he did this. The character one is just like this. It's the first character that all Chinese and Japanese calligraphy students or grade school students spend time calligraphing, one. And so you can look at it. It's right out here. And it just means one. However, you know, if we think of the harmony of difference and sameness, is the one just the sameness? Is the one the harmony of them? Going back to what Wansong was saying about including both sides, how do we find? So I don't think this is a question of, you know, linguistics or etymology. It's how do we find that one within us? And, you know, great American poet Walt Whitman said, "I am vast and contain multitudes." I am vast, I contain multitudes, Walt Whitman said. So, yeah, so there's one, but there's also many. How do those relate? Other comments or responses? Kyoshin, do you know there's one who's not busy?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about a conversation I had today with a person who's quite smart and quite interested in Soto Zen, has been practicing for 3 months or something. and is worried because she doesn't understand all the koans yet. So I was thinking about a way to talk to her about not worrying about not understanding the koans yet.
They're not something to understand. Maybe there's something to stand under or sit under.
So I thought I might report. I thought I might report on your talk tonight.
Good luck.
I understand her feeling unsettled because I mean it's helpful for you to say he's a Zen failure. The teacher of the founder.
Yep.
So that might reassure her. I think David has something to say.
Okay. I'm kind of perplexed because, having studied calligraphy, you know, is that you always want to get the perfect line, the perfect balance, and part of the conflict I have sometimes, and it was very good for me yesterday at the committed practice session we had, I got to see that everybody else is struggling too, and you know. But this drive for perfection, and I remember my teacher, you know, you get a circle on your calligraphy, a maru, it was good, or you got a peke, and it was bad, next. And I see that calligraphy, and I can see the style, how he puts it down, and makes a line, and it just ends infinitely. Mm-hmm. It trickles off, you know, and that's the point of it, and how that's striving for perfection, and yet, well, which seems in contrast to
this. Kaz Ta-Nehisi is a world-renowned great calligrapher, and you know, if you look at that one out there, from some point of view, from calligraphy mastery, you might say it's perfect, but it's not perfect. It sort of moves around and. So I would say maybe Japanese calligraphy teachers ask their students to get it perfectly, but what they're trying to get perfectly is a kind of imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
Imperfection. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest obstacles to Zen practice is aiming for perfection.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not about that. It's not about getting it right. It's not about being perfect. And many of you have heard me say my favorite koan, at least my favorite American koan, is from a great American yogi who said, if the world were perfect, it wouldn't be. So, I could call on any one of you. You know, as a jazz musician, Michael, you know that it's not about some idea of perfection. It's about the flow and the synergy of the different musicians. It's alive, right?
Yeah.
How is perfection for you in terms of your music? Or is it imperfection? Can you say something about it?
I found that I've only really been lucky enough to feel that a few times. And there's a moment where after you've spent years and hours practicing, doing something, you can be in a moment with a group and you really forget everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most beautiful moment that I've ever had in music. And then all the records that I've got, all the best ones, it wouldn't take you long to find mistakes,
right.
You know, real wrong notes and fingers have slipped and things have been played at the wrong time, but even still, like, there's no way in the world that you would go back and fix that with a computer editing. And if you did, it would really, really lose a lot of it.
That would be dead, yeah.
A lot of the Wayne Shorter stuff is some of the stuff that I really love. Sometimes he gets up high in a saxophone and he plays it. It's all out of tune, and it's strong, and it makes it, you know, makes you kind of make a face, you know, and squirm away from it. But at the same time, there's just something behind it that's really beautiful. And if it weren't, there's a pain and an anguish in it or something that comes from being out of tune that adds to it rather than.
Right.
It's different from, like, if it were a high school student who's playing that way through an ability or something, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the process or it's the experience or something, and then and Wayne Shorter actually says about his music, and he, unlike maybe what highly produced pop music is like, the stuff that he puts out in record, that's the first one, and then it starts developing thereafter. He'll play that again and again at concerts, and it will continue to develop. Whereas a lot of highly produced pop music is they polish it and they polish it and they polish it and they get it perfect and they redo it and they tweak it and they re-edit it, and once it's perfect, then they put it out and the world gets it and it stays the same. You know, you go and see that pop band play a concert 10 years and it sounds, they're trying to get it the exact same as it was in the record. That's kind of dull.
It's kind of dead, yeah.
In comparison, you know.
So this is about kind of being alive and allowing, as you said, the anguish and the feeling and our awareness of suffering to be part of the wholeness, part of the one who's not busy. It's not about being perfect. Mm-hmm. It's about, here we are, just this. So wholeness and perfection are not the same thing. We're almost out of time, but if there's one more comment or question, anyone? Bill?
My two very quick questions. Is this the beginning of using sweeping as a metaphor in Buddhism or in Chinese thought? Do you happen to know?
I can make some sweeping generalization, but I think there were probably various Taoist sages before Buddhism came to China. Probably Zhuangzi did some sweeping here and there. So I don't really know. I mean, I think there may be stories about sweeping before this. In fact, I'm pretty sure there are.
I can't remember the other question.
That's perfect.